Flyboy.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Hi, welcome to episode 10 of the Trash Compactor Podcast, our podcast for all things Star Wars from the female perspective. I'm Roan, and I'm here with...
MC.
And this month, we are talking about the Aftermath Trilogy by Chuck Wendig. The last book just came out a few weeks ago. And I can't wait to listen to the roundtable since I still haven't finished the book yet. We have another new guest this month. In addition to MC and April, we were joined by Smalls Darklighter, who has the best username ever. This isn't quite the first time we focused on a non-movie canon. Since our first episode, we talked a lot about Bloodline. Because it was our Leia-focused episode. But this is the first time we've had an episode that is almost entirely unrelated to the movies and the main characters of the movies. Obviously, they make an appearance in Aftermath, but they aren't, like, the main characters.
Yeah, we're introduced to a bunch of new characters that are absolutely wonderful, but we'll get more into that later. But Yeah, no, I think it's really good that we're focusing on one of the books, and or three of the books in this case, and, you know, soon enough we'll be doing an episode on the comics, because one thing that is different about this version of canon to the previous Legends canon is that everything is canon. Like, I've pulled up, back in the 90s, so many years ago, when I was originally in the Star Wars fandom, there was like this strange hierarchy of Star Wars canon, where it would be like you had your G canon, so you had like the movies, and then you had the T canon, which was television shows, and C canon, which was all like the books and stuff, and then like S canon, where it was like the original Marvel comics, where it's like, oh, this really isn't canon, but you know, we're just gonna put it here anyways.
It's so strange to me.
Yeah, and it was like because so much stuff contradicted itself that they needed to build these hierarchies. So it was basically like, if something in the movies contradicts something that happens in the books, what happens in the movies is what is the canon version of it.
Right.
But now that everything's been sold off to Disney and they've got the story group.
God bless, you know, they've tossed the story group.
Yeah, they've tossed everything out, and it's like, okay, so we've got the movies, and this is... It was the movies and the Clone Wars. That's what they declared was going to be their canon.
Right.
And they've started to add stuff in from Legends, but from there, they had their blank slate, and it's like, we are going to keep an eye on absolutely everything, and so everything's going to be a solid continuity. So if something happens, it happens within the universe.
Right.
And I found a quote from Pablo Hidalgo on Wikipedia. It was from celebrations in Anaheim in 2015, when they were announcing what books and comics were going to be coming out leading up to The Force Awakens. Right. So this was the journey to The Force Awakens.
Right, right.
And basically they said that the films were not going to get first dibs on the biggest stories. Sometimes there's going to be a story that's going to fit better in a novel.
Right.
Yeah. And Pablo Hidalgo said, this is an exact quote, "We are totally against the idea that novels just fill gaps."
And I mean, they're living up to that, because much stuff happens in Aftermath. And I mean, it's interesting because there is... You know, there is a contingent, obviously, that is upset that the EU isn't quote-unquote canon anymore, which seems really strange to me, considering that there were already things in the EU that weren't canon anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I kind of get it. We've talked about this, I know, before, that it makes sense that they wanted a blank slate to kind of just reboot everything and start over again. And I follow a lot of people on Tumblr who are very critical of this move. You know, they think of it as just like a cash grab or whatever else. I mean, I don't see that necessarily, just because the old canon's still available.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like they killed it and it's gone and it's dead forever and you can't ever go back and read to it, because I'm living proof of that, because I'm falling into the EU like crazy lately.
I mean, most the books are still available. They just have legends written on it now. Right. Like, you can go into the store and you can still buy them. I think it's harder to get some of the Dark Horse stuff, but I mean, but that has more to do with the fact that the comics have changed companies, because I think Del Rey was still doing the books even back when it was Legends. It's not like that changed.
Right, right.
And I was a huge fan of the EU. I've read so many of the books. I mean, I haven't read all of them, but I've read enough of them that I feel like I know what happened in the EU.
Right.
And it's cool. I love that it's, you know, that I experienced it, but it doesn't break my heart that we've moved on to something else, just because it was so contradictory, and you had writers who were fighting with each other about the plot of the of this universe within books.
Right.
So you had, like, all of the stuff that, you know, it really depended on the writer. Meanwhile, with what's going on now, they have the story group, and everything is so tightly controlled. I do mention in the roundtable that basically what they're doing with the Star Wars stories now, it's like the MCU on steroids.
Yeah.
Because you have the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where all of the movies are interconnected, and everything has to play with each other well. And I mean, even though you have different directors and writers working on everything, you can't contradict what somebody else is doing.
Right.
It's all going to work as a cohesive whole. That's what Star Wars is doing. It's just, it's not just with the movies. It is with comics. It is with books. It is with TV shows, and it's with video games.
I mean, I'm excited for us to get to the comics, which I know we're going to do. Right now, we're currently planning to do two separate episodes on the comics, because yeah, there's just so much.
There's a lot, yeah.
I mean, just the ongoing Star Wars comic alone, I am absolutely in love with.
I actually just the other day bought Poe Dameron and Kanan the Last Padawan, which
Kanan the Last Padawan is so good. Oh my god, it's gonna break your heart.
Yeah, which thanks to Greg for giving me an Amazon gift card for Christmas. Otherwise I would not have been able to get them.
Yeah, I mean, the comics are great. The books so far have been amazing. We really haven't had a chance to talk a lot about, like, Lost Stars. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned it in passing just because I know April and I both adore it.
I still haven't finished it yet.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
So good.
There's so many. I actually, with the new canon, I went out and I bought every single book in the new canon because I wanted to have it to be able to read them. And so then I ended up, you know, receiving Amazon packages of like 5 books at a time. So
you have a backlog is what you're saying.
I do have a backlog.
Well, I mean, I haven't finished all the new canon stuff yet, and now I'm diving into the Rogue Squadron books.
Of course
so
you are.
So I'm like even more, like all I'm reading now is Star Wars. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah. And it's, you can really archive binge on the EU because there is so much.
Well, you know, it was realizing that I am having feelings about characters now, like massive, massive fangirl feelings about characters that A, I didn't know existed 3 months ago, and B, don't exist in canon anymore officially.
Well, don't exist in canon yet.
Yet.
Because they are fairly good about bringing in important characters from the EU. Hey, Tarkin book that's going to come out April 10th. That's April 11th. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like this whole big, massive world to play in, and Disney is just making it bigger.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely important that they wipe the slate clean because there was no way that they could... The EU was too massive. You would not have been able to do a... you know, sequel movie with the EU as it was, because there was just too much information for people to understand.
Well, I mean, and also, how do you make a trilogy that people like are into and interested in when everyone knows every single moment that happened from like
that is very the true,
second
yeah.
after Endor right up into generations later.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there were so many people who were like, oh, well, they should make the Thrawn trilogy. They should make the Thrawn trilogy. It's like, but they released the Thrawn trilogy. Everybody knows what happens in the Thrawn trilogy. And not only that, but I mean, if you're making the movies now, the Thrawn trilogy is set, I think, like 7 years after Yavin.
That's a little bit difficult right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I love Mark and Carrie and Harrison, but they don't look like it. They're in their 30s
anymore. No. Yeah. So a little bit difficult. So,
which is one of the things that's really great about having the books have such a priority now with filling in things that happened between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, that, you know, they don't look like they did right after Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
so
God.
You can and do stories that happened in the comics and the novels where it's like they still look like babies.
The comics right now are like really right after the events of A New Hope. And so it's so much fun to go back and see those characters at that time period again. It's just mm-hmm. a lot of fun. So yeah, we definitely have a lot more canon to dive into.
Mm-hmm.
I, so far, knock wood, have managed to avoid spoilers for the rest of Aftermath that I haven't gotten to yet. but I'm very excited to keep reading it. And, you know, we talked about Rogue One last time. They're going to be doing some Rogue One books now.
They are. They're coming out the beginning of May. Not on May the 4th, because books come out on Tuesday,
right.
And I think May the 4th is on a Thursday.
Right.
But close enough.
Yes.
And we're getting a book on Charon Baz.
I know! I'm so excited to see that ship take off. That ship has, like, on my dash, at least.
That ship is fucking sailing hard.
Yeah.
Like, Donnie Yen has talked about it.
That it's so awesome, just for so many reasons, not the least of which that it's an amazing ship, but, like, these are two men who are not white and over 50. And so
yeah.
I'm like so happy to see that take off. But that's
yeah,
kind of
no.
tangent.
Yeah, it's a tangent, but it's an amazing tangent. Because, I mean, like, I will always talk about Charon Baz. but yeah, I mean, like, with the Rogue One stuff, we can, you know, do more of the history of the characters now. And
right, because we know there isn't a future. So,
yeah, and we know as soon as episode 8 comes out, like a day after, there's going to be like a flood of books where it's like, here is all of the stuff that Luke Skywalker did.
I'm so excited. I seriously
because
cannot wait.
They're playing so coy with Luke right now because they want to save the big reveal for episode 8.
Right,
which
and, they have to.
Which I can respect, you know? It's like, we know that they want that moment. So, you know, it's kind of like, it's hide and seek with Luke where it's like, oh, they're mentioning him here and, oh, maybe he's going to appear here, but no, he doesn't.
I would tell you the truth. Every time I get a new book, you know, I read everything on my Kindle. And so every time I get a new book,
you do a find, don't you? You search through.
I do. I search for his name. although I do have to confess with Aftermath, I haven't done that yet, but I did search for Wedge because now I have like massive Wedge fangirl feelings.
Everybody should have massive Wedge fangirl.
I don't know how
feelings.
This happened
Wedge
to me.
Is amazing.
It's bad. I've gotten sucked into like watching Dennis Lawson's old stuff. So I'm at that stage.
It's adorable.
So expect me to be talking about Wedge Antilles a lot more going forward on this podcast.
Well, I'm glad because I mean, for a while I felt like alone in my love of Wedge.
You are not alone. And I even have a ship for him. And boy, we talk about me being the rare pair queen. Wedge and Tycho are like, there's 11 fics on AO3. And one of them is mine. So I think I've hit a new level of rare pair here.
Okay, so we should probably
go on
move on to...
Yeah.
The news, yeah, because there's some news that we need to talk about. So.
Excellent.
Hey,
This is MC, and this is what's happening in the galaxy. An excerpt from Timothy Zahn's new novel Thrawn came out on March 2nd. The 740-word preview takes place during the Clone Wars and features the first meeting between Thrawn and the Emperor. Zahn also revealed at Emerald City Comic Con that he has pitched further Thrawn books to Del Rey. After doing a trilogy and a duology in the Legends universe, the new canon should have a tetralogy. Thrawn will be released April 11th. John Boyega Instagrammed a piece of art given to him by The Last Jedi director Rian Johnson. Poking fun at Boyega's trouble pronouncing technical jargon, the art features Boyega dressed as Finn, looking distressed with the words Biohexacrypt beneath the Star Wars logo. Fans are currently trying to cover what meaning, if any, this word has. While Star Wars Rebels has just ended its stunning third season, Lucasfilm has announced that Rebels will be returning for a fourth season. More information on the show will come out at Star Wars Celebration. The first photo of the cast of the Han Solo movie was released just as shooting began at Pinewood Studios. The photo featured actors Woody Harrelson, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Alden Ehrenreich, Emilia Clarke, Yuna Tsutomu, Donald Glover, and directors Chris Miller and Phil Lord. Missing was Thandie Newton. Shortly after the photo was released, it was announced Michael K. Williams was cast in the film. Rumors suggest he will be playing the villain, but no character details have yet been released. Williams has appeared on The Wire, Boardwalk Empire, and The Night Of. The film will also reveal how Han Solo came to own the Millennium Falcon, be friends with Chewbacca, and even be known as Han Solo, telling fans for the first time that our beloved Han was not in fact born with that name. This information came from Disney CEO Bob Iger at a conference hosted by USC's Marshall and Annenberg Schools. During the conversation, he also revealed that Carrie Fisher's death will not affect the character of Leia Organa in The Last Jedi. Sean Lennon, son of the late John Lennon and friend of Carrie Fisher, released a demo of Birdsong, a song he had written with Carrie Fisher before her death. The demo was released on SoundCloud and featured the vocals of Willow Smith. Star Wars fans might want to head to Kansas City on May 6th. The event Battle for KC will be attempting to break the Guinness World Record for largest lightsaber battle ever recorded. Tickets for the event start at $10, and the money being raised will support the Children's Mercy Cystic Fibrosis Center. More information can be found at their Facebook. Packaging for The Last Jedi toys has been released, featuring Rey with a new hairstyle, as well as Poe and Finn. Lucasfilm announced toys in these packages will be released September 1st on Force Friday 2. The global fan event will include toys, collectibles, books, apparel, and more. The first merchandise for The Last Jedi are t-shirts and pins to be sold at Star Wars Celebration, and then at select Disney Park locations for the Force of Change initiative. Speaking of Star Wars Celebration, the event will be taking place April 13th to 16th at the Orange County Convention Center. Artwork merging all three trilogies has been released to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the franchise. Hayden Christensen will be appearing at the event, and Mark Hamill will host a tribute to Carrie Fisher. Funko has revealed its convention-exclusive pops, including Leia from Hoth, Hooded Jedi Luke, Grand Admiral Thrawn, and Qui-Gon Jinn as a Force ghost. It has been announced there will be no celebration in 2018, with the next event in 2019. There may be another reason to celebrate at Celebration, with heavy rumors that the event will be used to announce an Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film, starring Ewan McGregor reprising his role from the prequel trilogy. The movie would follow Obi-Wan during the years between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. That's all for the Trash Compactor news. Links to more information on the stories we've reported on can be found in the show notes. If you have any tips, email us at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com. Nora Susser was born on the planet Akiva, living in the capital Mira. She married Brenton Wexley and gave birth to their only child, Temin, in the early years of the Empire. Brenton was working with a rebel cell and was taken from their home by stormtroopers. Heartbroken by the loss of her husband, Nora became a freighter pilot for the Rebel Alliance, hoping she might locate her lost husband. At the request of Commander Wedge Antilles, Nora flew a Y-Wing as Gold 9 in the assault on the second Death Star. While her fighter took a lot of damage and her astromech was destroyed, Nora survived the battle. With the end of open hostility, Nora wanted to reconnect with Temin, who she left with her sister and her wife. Now 15 years old, Temin had left his aunt's care and become a junk dealer with his B-1 battle droid Mr. Bones. The reunion was tense, especially when Nora received a distress signal from Wedge. Nora drugged her son to get him to leave Akiva and took him with her to save Wedge. Nora allied with bounty hunter Jazz Amari and former Imperial Sinjir Wrath Velis in her mission. Through many dangerous battles against Admiral Ray Sloan, Nora had several close brushes with death, but managed to rescue Wedge and get back to the New Republic on Chandrilla. At the behest of a pregnant Princess Leia Organa, Nora took up a mission to rescue Han Solo, who had left to rescue Chewbacca and liberate Kashyyyk. During all of their adventures, Nora's relationship with Wedge became romantic. These newfound feelings would become complicated when, after finding Solo and liberating a Kashyyyk prison camp, Nora found Branton still alive. Despite her feelings for Wedge, Nora would try to keep her family together, despite Brenton's psychological peculiarities, which Temin blamed on Nora. During the celebration of the liberation of Kashyyyk, the reason for Brenton's problems were revealed, as all of the prisoners had been fitted with control chips, making them sleeper agents to attack the New Republic. Nora tangled again with Sloan, whom she personally blamed for Brenton's forced betrayal. On her mission to track down Sloan, Nora ended up on Jakku, where the remnants of the Empire were gathering. Nora was taken prisoner by stormtroopers and kept locked up for weeks until she was rescued by the damaged Mr. Bones. Nora was on the front lines of the Battle of Jakku. She would lose her husband in the battle, but she and Temin survived, returning to the New Republic. While Nora mourned her husband, Temin began to notice her affections for Wedge. Eventually, Temin would become one of the strongest flyers in the Resistance. The Wexley legacy carried on as he survived the assault on Starkiller Base. Welcome to this episode's roundtable of the Trash Compactor podcast. We're going to be talking about the Aftermath trilogy by Chuck Wendig. This trilogy is set a year after Return of the Jedi and deals directly with the fallout of the original trilogy and leads into an important event leading into the new trilogy. So we're here to talk about this important milestone in the Star Wars books. I'm MC and I'm here with...
April.
Smalls.
All right, so the Aftermath trilogy. These books are pretty epic. I mean, Pablo Hidalgo had actually said when they were restarting the Star Wars book universe that the movies aren't going to be where like all of the major events happen, and certainly this book shows that.
Oh yeah,
huge! Like a whole other like trilogy. Like it could be a whole other movie trilogy, but not.
Oh yeah,
be able to encompass everything. But it's interesting enough to have been a movie trilogy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. We get introduced to, like, a ton of awesome new characters. There are so many new characters, and they're all, like, super cool.
We have Sinjir Wrath Velis.
Oh, yeah. He's fucking awesome. And you can tell they're setting him up for more. Like, this is not going to be the only time he appears.
I was so excited that he became Mon Mothma's advisor. Like, I could not have predicted that.
From the beginning, hell no. I was like, oh, he's going to be a tragic gay and he's going to die of his alcoholism. And
I didn't think he would die, but I just thought he would just kind of like, I don't know, mope around like semi-happily.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I love that we got so much Mon Mothma in
Oh, yeah.
End. I love the way Sinjir described her as a vicious twig, like towards the end of the book.
Honestly, there is more Mon Mothma in these trilogies than I think there was ever in any of the Legends books.
Really? That's so encouraging to me then.
Well, I mean, we talked about this on the Bloodline podcast. They really didn't know what to do with Leia, and they really didn't know what to do with Mon Mothma. They tried to stay so far away from anything political.
Oh.
Well, I mean, obviously you saw that, like, in the prequel trilogy, that political stuff really kind of does not work out too well. But yeah. I think they've been handling it really well in the new canon.
Yeah.
I think I'm wondering if it's because it's easier to digest in book form than it is in, you know, a film. Like, the audience expectations are adventure, voila. I don't know.
Perhaps. It does take a lot more exposition, and it's hard to talk about trade federations an expository way that doesn't sound like a lecture in ways, or I think it just depends on the writers.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, also like the movies, it's all of this, grand adventuring, and the political stuff grinds everything to a dead stop. But in this, they're able to develop it more as like political intrigue. And I think it works a lot better. And I love what they did with Mon Mothma. It's like, wow, you have an actual personality. You're not just like delivering like political speeches. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me reading this after seeing Rogue One, and in the Rogue One novelization, we got a little bit of Mon Mothma. And here it was like, okay, now we're getting tons of it. And I don't know.
Yeah.
She's conflicted in sort of the whole thing that's been going on for years between having a strong military presence to unite the galaxy or letting people have more freedom and not be under threat of military force to cooperate. And she sort of is at the center of that pretty much the entire time.
I think Mon Mothma is in a really interesting position because she is part of the old guard. She is like one of the only people that has been around since the old Republic. So she saw the fall of everything, and she kind of wants to bring stuff back to that. But I mean, the whole reason the Emperor was able to take over in the first place was because that system was so fucking broken.
Yeah.
And we're able to see some of that come out in this again, and it comes out even more in Bloodlines. So
I felt like I saw her struggling with that, like realizing that it had fallen but she doesn't know what else to put in its place,
Yeah.
And what do you do because galaxies are enormous.
Yeah.
Like, that's always been my thing. It's just like, it's hard to keep one planet together with disparate government. Like, how do you do anything with an entire galaxy? Like, that's insane. Yeah. And I guess, for them, I guess having a known galaxy maybe makes the scope of the galaxy slightly smaller. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like it's huge, but still, like, that's insane.
Of course, also at this time, Mon Mothma is a politician. She's trying to govern. But they're not actually really in a position where they can govern because they're still at war. They've had the big victory celebration, but we're shown throughout this entire thing that there is still like this very strong faction of Imperials, which is, I love that they have done that instead of having, everything's happy right away. That's totally not realistic. You've got to have the reconstruction period. You've got to have things, actually, like, you got to defeat everybody. You can't just take down the Emperor and have things be cool.
April, you want to talk about your girl, Rey Sloane?
Rey Sloane, and I saw somebody today talk about how, like, whether it was by accident or not, Rey Sloane has turned out to be one of the most interesting Star Wars characters ever created. It's just like, and I loved all, like, this whole time, because she's, I don't even want to say she's likable, because it's not that she's exactly likable, but she's not an anti-hero. She's somewhat of an antagonist, but not really. It's such an interesting position that she's put in. And then just the twist at the end, because you're expecting, I somewhat expected, okay, maybe she's going to finally see the Empire for what it is and whatever. And she doesn't. She's just like, okay, no, I want to get my Empire back, because she never realizes that her Empire, with all its order, was horrible and subjugated entire planets and exploited people. She never realized that and just wanted that back. And so I guess in a way she's the foil to Mon Mothma if you look at it there. But like, I was just amazed that she was just like, no, I just want to run it all. And now I want to know what happened.
Well, even canonically, she's always, considering herself like a foil to Leia, which is like super interesting. I think one of the things that I really love about Rey is that she is very human a Star Wars villain. Because, let's face it, a lot of the Star Wars villains, they might as well have, the mustaches that they're, tying, damsels in distress to train tracks. There's not really a whole lot there. But she's opportunistic. She will, do what she has to do to, go with her means. She has a backstory, about why she believes in this. It's not just because I like evil things. It's like, no, this makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's because she was threatened by chaos and the Empire offered an end to that. So you know, from point of view, the Empire was a good thing. And mm-hmm. that sort of goes along with kind of Sienna and Thane's whole reason for joining the Empire in Lost Stars.
I wish I had more like collected thoughts on this matter, but comparing and contrasting like Sienna and Rae Sloane as these two women who are committed to the Empire, but in the ways they're alike and the way their paths completely diverge is really something interesting to chew on.
Definitely. I just loved how much Sienna's whole path, it had to do so much with her culture as well,
mm-hmm.
with loyalty and everything. And yes,
talking about
Rae Sloane.
Yeah, Rae Sloane. We should really, you know, make sure to
maybe we should call her Sloane. Yeah, I don't know.
But I was really kind of knocked back by just how many really strong, and by strong, I mean they're both, you know, physically strong, well-written female characters were in this.
Yes.
Basically, women were kind of running the show through this whole thing. Claudia Gray has been the writer who has written the best, you know, female characters in terms of the books so far, I think. And, you know, Chuck Wendig is really good on him, so.
Yeah, and he's so casual about it, too, I think. You know, it's not like it's, like, the way he'll just pepper, you know, women into all sorts of situations and mm-hmm. roles where they might not normally, like, some authors might not put them. And then just, God, the whole thing. Nora Wexley, oh my God.
Oh, what I was going to say is that women run the whole thing, and a lot of the characters are not, like, young, pretty women, you know?
No, they're not. Well, I mean, Wedge thinks Nora is pretty.
I mean, I'm sure they are pretty because it's Star Wars and everyone is beautiful, but but you know what I mean? It's not just, like, young heroes. There's middle-aged women here.
Yeah,
Rae Sloane's in her mid-40s. I think Nora Wexley would be, too, at least. I mean, and she's described as having silver hair, right?
I'm not sure is it supposed to be naturally silver, or is it supposed to be, like, some sort of species thing? I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I think she's in her late 30s, yeah.
She's got a 15-year-old son, and it doesn't sound mm-hmm. like she was, like, kid when she had him. And I do get the impression that she's supposed to be older than Wedge, who is supposed to be older than Luke, so you know, she's at the very least in the late 30s, if not 40s.
Speaking of, like, that whole thing, I thought it was interesting that Brinton was pretty much sacrificed in service of that ship.
Like, yes!
It was almost a situation where it's like, oh, what do we do with Brinton? Oh, okay, we can kill him.
I was kind of waiting for that to happen. I'm awful, but I was like, as soon as he came back in, I was like, okay, when is he gonna die? Because I need Nora and Wedge to get back together.
But Brenton and Sloane's relationship was just, and then when Nora finally came upon them, I was just like, oh my gosh, I want these three characters to, like, snipe at each other
mm-hmm.
for a long time.
Yeah, oh god. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, when Rae Sloane did not die, like, I was going to just be done with the trilogy when I thought that Rae might have died in Life Debt.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, are you kidding me? Why would you do that? And then she comes back, and I was like, of course she didn't die. Why would I even be fooled for a second? Like,
oh, that reminds me. Life Debt had so many fake deaths, so many death fake outs. I think Nora Weck, or is that Aftermath? Anyway,
that was
Nora
an Aftermath.
Has fake,
yeah.
Okay, Nora has fake died a couple times.
Yeah.
Snap was thrown off the roof of the palace or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he crowd surfed among the rebelling Akivans. Sorry, I'm just, okay, going back to the very first Aftermath book, I'm remembering Nora stole that TIE fighter, and she was thinking, oh, yeah, these are so unsafe. They don't even have an eject button. And then, you know, it crashes.
Yeah.
And she's like, last words, I love you, Temin. And then she just, like, walks back into the bar and is like, guess they had an eject seat after all.
Yeah.
Okay. Convenient.
From what I've seen online, and, you know, these were kind of my feelings as well. The first book is okay.
Yeah.
But it's really once you get into Life Debt that Life Debt's great.
Yeah, I've actually told people that if they want to, like, read an article, like a summary of the first one and then go right into Life Debt, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they need some background, but I'm just like, no, you can skip that one if you don't want to read 500 pages or whatever.
I think their hands were tied in terms, it came out, it was released in 2015, mm-hmm. like months before, or maybe it was 2014. No, I think it was 2015, months before the movie, so he couldn't have, like, Han thinking about how he doesn't want to leave Leia because she's pregnant because, you know.
Yeah.
Because of my, like, conspiracy theory, as I, like, think about stuff, I pay attention to publication dates and try to pretend I can figure out what's going on in the mind of the story group as they...
That too, because I'm just like, okay, this is where we are. So what's next? Do we have another round of books coming? Or do we not have any coming until closer to or after episode 8?
Well, there's the Thrawn novel.
Yeah, the Thrawn novel's coming out. I think in May.
I know this. When is this coming out? I pay attention to book release dates to a ridiculous extent. my poor local library. I'm requesting them, and I sometimes don't know how they're like request. You know, when they're quarterly or like when they. So like I'll like put in a request like 2 weeks after the book's announced, and a couple times they've gotten these. I've gotten these emails from them that are like, try back again. In a couple months.
I think I've been the reason a couple of times that they've gotten more than one copy of something, so that's cool.
Nice. Because I'm like, I can't buy all this, but I need to be the first to read it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got it. So we've got Thrawn coming out on April 11th. And then mostly young reader stuff, because we've got like Guardian of the Wills and the Rebel Rising stuff coming out.
The young reader stuff is good, though.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Well, I'm definitely going to be getting those. It looks like the next like big novel that we have coming out is Inferno Squad.
Yes! Yeah, a lot of Rogue One related or like...
Yeah, it looks like most of it. There's some prequel trilogy stuff and Rogue One stuff, but I think they're going to be playing it kind of coy. I was actually thinking about this, about the fact that, you know, we only got any references to Luke, and that's been kind of happening with all of the books so far. Anything said after Return of the Jedi, they've been very coy with Luke. And I think that's because what's going to happen is episode 8's going to come out, and then there's going to be this deluge of books about Luke and what was going on.
I hope so. I mean, we definitely, the only new Luke content we're getting is in the Marvel comics. And
yeah. And that's set and between things, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it's set, but it's right now it's set, it's, they haven't reached Empire Strikes Back
yet. Yeah.
So I can imagine we could get a whole lot of content out of what he's been doing, because he's already sort of like wandering, you know, even before Bloodline. So I think we could get a lot of stuff and maybe some more background with his journeys once he's saddled with his nephew. And
Who can we talk about, like what they did with Den in this? Like, I mean, he only appears in like one little scene, but still everything that is in there from like when he's still in utero is just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Please, you know, do not talk to me about how Kylo Ren is irredeemable when they throw in lines about how Luke says, the brighter the light, the darker the shadow.
And how Nora Wexley talks about him smelling like a pile of clean towels.
Just to, just to play devil's advocate, Singer calls him a squalling grub monkey, so...
I mean, yes.
So, it's a sign, you guys.
That whole paragraph about his birth and about how there were legends, you know, about his birth, about him being born with a full head of hair or, like, a full set of teeth, those are, like, I meant to look up. Kids being born with a full set of teeth was like a thing that was said about certain kinds of children.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Oh, kind of like that in that whole genre of like if you're born with the caul still on you or like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very like dark fairy tale stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a line in there when Leia was first feeling his presence in there and she feels like his goodness. And then she feels like the dark force around him. And she says that Luke always said that the brighter the light, the darker the shadow. And I'm like, you don't put that line in there if that's not actually going to relate to what happens to Kylo later on. I mean.
Oh, agreed.
Oh, and fuck Han calling him little bandit and Leia calling him little angel.
I was just like, are you kidding me? They're just like, I'm sorry. I was just like so... Like, blatantly, like, this little baby Ben.
They still didn't explain why they named him Ben when they...
Oh, no.
But we do know canonically he is Ben Solo now. Because there was some debate about that, whether he was Ben Solo or Ben Organa. But
yes, yeah. And we know he's not Obi-Wan with the nickname Ben.
That is very true, yeah.
Too bad.
And Chewbacca's family.
His middle name is Chewbacca. Oh my gosh, Lumpy, this is canon.
I cried.
So did I. I cannot believe that I actually cried because I was like, oh my god, Lumpy. And I know he's not called Lumpy in this, but he's fucking Lumpy.
Lumpawaru. Oh, yeah. I cried at so many like unexpected points.
I know, same
in
here.
This book.
Yeah. I cried over Mr. Bones.
Oh god.
Yes.
Why, like, the murder droid's dying is like the worst thing because of how it happened, because he was in the middle of like celebrating and he was killed by friendly fire.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, it was god. Like, oh shit.
I mean, we haven't actually talked about Mr. Bones yet. And I think this is like, this justifies like every battle droid in the prequel trilogy. Battle droids were fucking annoying, but just if they have to exist so that Mr. Bones can exist, it's like, I'm totally cool with that.
Yes.
Because he's so cool. I love him. It's like, I can't believe it's like, I have to choose between my favorite formerly evil murder droids in the Star Wars universe, because it's Mr. Bones and K2. It's like, who's my favorite?
Guess what I just found out in folklore. A baby born with teeth, the superstition is that a baby born with teeth might bring about the demise of either one or both parents.
Oh god, you're kidding.
So that was totally purposeful. Like,
sorry for the yelling.
That's good on Chuck Wendig. Like, he looked that up.
Charles, how dare you?
Wow. Okay, anyway, yes, let's talk about murder droids some more.
Every new like piece of, you know, film or book or whatever, I was like, okay, this one's gonna have a new droid and I won't love it as, you know, but no, they always like get their little hooks into me. Like, I love droids. I'm like that. I love droids. I love every kind of droid.
I mean, there's a very small part in, I think it's in one of the interludes, which we're going to have to talk about the interludes at some point. But basically, it sounds like they're describing like the BB-8 type droids are like designed
the
as
droids.
Comfort droids. Yeah.
Yes.
Therapy droids for veterans.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh my God, there's therapy droids and therapy Ewoks too.
Yeah, oh, I don't really like the therapy Ewoks, but anyway.
I have the headcanon that, like, BB-8 may have at one point been a therapy droid for Poe.
I was wondering that myself, too, so.
When he was, like, orphaned, you know,
yes.
His mom
got
him a therapy droid.
Yeah, which could explain why he's just so, like, absolutely attached to him. Like, I mean, that's past, like, you know, this droid's, you know, important to the resistance. That's my droid.
With Mr. Bones, I didn't cry so much at his death, although I was really sad, but what really made me cry was when he got blown apart by the stormtroopers on Jakku.
Oh, yeah.
When he came to see Nora. And then they had that whole, there was this whole, like, half a chapter about his consciousness, you know, as he's lying there and as the Skittermouse, like, bumps his wires. And it was so crazy because I realized back in an aftermath, Temin had said that he put, like, all kinds of, like, random stuff in his programming. He was like, oh, in the battle moves of, like, some separatist general. But in this section in Empire's Inn, you realize that separatist general was General Grievous.
Yeah.
Because he has that memory. He remembers being a battle droid, but he also remembers, like, wielding lightsabers, and it's just...
Yeah, there's also... He has a glitch at one point, and the line he has is actually a line from one of the Star Wars video games.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, Chuck Wendig went for some deep cuts on things. Like, I mean, Christ, he quoted Hamilton at one point.
Really?
Yeah, during Lando's interlude... He remembers Leia saying, "The rebellion's easy, governing's harder."
Oh my gosh.
Shit. That's why that stuck out to me, because I was just like, oh, that's a really good line. I was like, oh, yeah, because that's a Lin-Manuel Miranda.
When he does stuff like this, I call him Charles. I'm like, Charles Wendig, what? What did you notice that, I can't remember her opponent's name, but Mon Mothma definitely got called a nasty woman.
She did.
Her political opponent was like, what are you doing with your nastiness? And I was like,
yeah,
I see you.
Yeah. So, okay. Lando and that fucking blaster. You don't just set something up like that. Like, I'm like, so what's going to happen with this blaster? Chuck Wendig in some form of something. Are we going to have Kylo Ren finding this blaster? Like, what's going to happen here?
Rogue Kylo Ren.
Rogue Kylo Ren finding the blaster when he needs it most.
I mean, they've definitely established that things that happen in the books are important. Like, I mean, I think they're trying to set up the movies so that you can watch them and enjoy them. But if you're paying attention to everything that's going on, you're going to get just so much of a larger story. It's almost like what they've done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but on steroids, where just everything kind of crosses over and everything is important, which I love because I'm such a completionist. I love trying to, you know, like read everything.
So I think that's a good segue into talking about Jakku.
Yes. We have to talk about Jakku.
Like, there's just so much. I was just like, oh, that whole thing with Jakku is still something, like, that's a huge part of this whole trilogy, and we haven't even touched on it, because there is so much else that happens.
Yeah, it's basically, it is the whole point of the trilogy. It's, like, the entire last book is all about Jakku. Not only is it Jakku so important, because they set up why it's this huge, you know, graveyard of ships and everything, but they don't actually explain why Jakku is important to the Emperor. Which, yeah. I think we're going to find that out in episode 8. Because this
is... Yeah. Because it tells us why Jakku is important to Rax and in the scheme of the Galactic Civil War. But we don't know still. We're like, okay, what the hell does Rey have to do with all of this? Rey. Like, Rey, no name.
Yeah, it's interesting because we get Rax's perspective on, you know, what Palpatine's plan here is. So we get, like, some kind of idea, but it's not, it's clearly not everything, you know.
Yeah, and are you guys pretty sure that this entity that the Emperor sensed in the wild, in wild space was Snoke?
I could see it, yeah.
Where are you?
I feel like I'm pretty sure, but then I get some people being like, well, we don't know for sure, but I'm like, how many dark entities are there? I mean, I know there's thousands of them probably, but I think it's Snoke.
Like, yeah.
In one of Leia's visions, she's like, she's having a nightmare and she thinks what's coming for us. And I'm like, Snoke.
Yeah.
I could definitely get more behind the whole Rey Palpatine or Rey as a reincarnation of Anakin after this. Yeah, no, there's definitely something, you know, up there.
I feel like if she's anyone's reincarnation, it's Rax's, like, coming back out of spite.
Yeah, like, well, it's sort of, because I had an idea, I was just like, okay, the observatory on Jakku was obviously just supposed to be, like, was it only what we saw, as in this place to store these relics and the place to start the contingency? Or, like, some of the others, do we also, was there a lab at any point? Like, I feel like there were a lot of questions that could lead, and to me, sort of left me with this idea that there's much more to Rey than just, oh, who was her grandfather or father, you know? It's like, and why is she there on that particular planet?
And interestingly enough, the Jakku was kind of the foundation of, like, this whole stormtrooper, you know, child soldier idea thing that gets carried through with Finn's storyline. And it's like, wow, I can't believe... And Hux.
I could talk about the stormtrooper program for so long, but I think it would go out of the scope of the Aftermath books, so...
And of course, we do get a little bit more on Hux in this, too. And we find out his first name, and he's Armitage Hux. And oh my god, could they hit us over the head anymore with the Hitler parallels?
I think I'm really curious about when he took over, you know, and I think he had to have been pretty young when he took over from his father, because they were obviously grooming him for that super early.
Yeah.
And Rae Sloane continued that, you know, and that was, oh my god, that was such a great example of her being, like, knowing when to take the opportunity. The fact that she made an alliance with a child, you know, and she saw that that's what she needed. I was like, that's amazing.
And his father is already kind of broken at this point. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's just going to be a couple years before he's taken over. So
he's like 5.
Yeah, well, you know, he could be 12 or 13 or something. Maybe that's why he likes child soldiers so much.
Well, and that would explain, too, because, like, he's very proprietary over them in The Force Awakens. Yeah. He's like, my stormtroopers and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you're 30. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But then you're like, okay, he has been around since the inception of it and has had some level of control over them. So he could have been a little enfant terrible and, like, just been in charge of them since he was, like, 14 or 15, for all we know.
Yeah.
The one thing that I really felt with this trilogy was a connection between all of the different eras of Star Wars, more than anything else. Like, I mean, with, like, Bloodlines, we know that Leia, you know, knows about Padme and Anakin and everything. But in this, we get actual little bits from, there's, you know, references to Hera's father from Rebels, the chips that they put in all of, like, the prisoners, that's the same chips that they used for the clone troopers for Order 66. And of course, I have to bring it up. Jar Jar appears.
Okay, I cried. That is one of the interludes I cried at.
Yeah. It was actually, I thought it was really well done. It's like,
yes.
I mean, it's obviously, I don't want Jar Jar to appear like he appeared in the prequels, because he's not very good if you're over the age of 8. But they actually work with that, and they make him incredibly sympathetic, and that little scene was incredibly heartwarming. And you kind of hope that maybe while he's out on his travels, maybe that Luke comes by and sees Jar Jar at some point.
I hadn't even thought of that. Oh. That's amazing. My heart. No, because I was just like, I mean, I think we know from a perspective, like, there are problems with Jar Jar as, like, a character, the way he's written and all that. But another part of me feels with this, like, huge sort of, like, constant fanboy bashing of him and along with the prequels, I feel a little protective of him. So I was like, this is good. Like, it's sad in universe, but it also doesn't, like, you know, viciously kill him off, which always, like, bothered me.
And they do address it that adults hate him, but the kids really love him. If you go to a convention and you actually see, like, little kids, they love the prequels and they love Jar Jar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what, and you got to think about characters like that, and that, you know, some characters aren't for you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it is with the Ewoks. I love the Ewoks because I was 7 years old or whatever the first time I encountered them or whatever, now, like, 5 years old. So, of course, I love the Ewoks.
Yeah.
And it's like, we always have to remember as adults that not everything is for our consumption.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Ghostbusters or a revival of Annie or whatever, it's like, no, that's not for you.
Yeah, I guess that's a good thing to, like, not just like, oh, some of this is for children. Some of this, it's some things aren't for me as a white person, you know, or like, I know there was a backlash against Sinjir as just, you know, he just mentions he's not into women. And a lot of people got upset about that. But Chuck was basically like, hey, this isn't for you, you know? So that was encouraging.
And it's so ridiculous that people would get up in arms about that. It's like, it is a story about an entire galaxy of people. I'm pretty sure some of them might end up being queer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, it's not just Sinjir, because we also have Temin being raised by his aunt and her wife. So,
oh yeah.
I mean, they're not big characters, but it's still, you know, there's a lot of characters that appear. So out of the number of characters that appear, to have 4 of them end up being queer. And then there's also in one of the interludes, one of the characters is non-binary.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. The pirate.
Eliodie, the pirate queen.
Eliodie Maracavagna.
Yes. Who uses non-binary pronouns.
Yeah.
There's also in one of the interludes that is by one of the little, like, orphans in Coruscant. He remembers, like, his parents are died. He remembers seeing his 2 dads dead, of course, because children can't have nice things in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yes. Those children on Coruscant, though, that's another thing where I was like, okay, what is with the child soldier stuff and all the new things? Like, really, it's getting to be so much of a thing.
I think child soldiers have been a thing since, I mean, at least... I mean, definitely since the prequels, it's not quite so blatant, but...
Complaining, but it is. It's just definitely a thing, and is it a thing where it's like, okay, this is just, they're there, or are we making statement about it at all?
I definitely think they're being more clear about it than they were with the clones.
Mm-hmm.
I
think a lot of it probably comes from the fact that this is a galaxy that's been torn apart by war for the last 20-odd years. So, yeah, there are going to be kids who are going to be mixed up in that, because this is just this is the world that they've grown up in. We haven't really talked about, we've mentioned Snap, but we haven't really gotten into anything about, you know, him, which he's a very important character because he's somebody who's, we are actually introduced to in The Force Awakens, played by Greg Gardenberg. And I'm pretty sure the character was originally only thrown in as J.J. Abrams loves putting Greg Gardenberg in everything he does. So it's like his good luck charm. So I think that's the only reason the character was in The Force Awakens. And then in this, they're like, well, let's, you know, give him like a complete backstory. We'll introduce you to his parents. We'll show you how he got into the rebellion, resistance. They're really gonna have to, you know, there's so much nomenclature for what that fucking group is, the good guys.
Well, and let me mention here that Snap Wexley then is also old enough to be Rey's father.
That is true, yeah.
Oh, thanks for that.
All of the possible dad.
Oh, but hey, no, Smalls and I were doing the math to try to figure out if there's any way that Rey Sloane could be Finn's mother, but...
Oh, we tried.
Yeah,
we tried.
Unless they've got really great fertility treatments, I think she would have been a little too old,
yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I had actually, like, that flitted through my mind. Because, you know, that happens when you only have, you know, like, a couple of black characters in...
I want to talk, just mention how wonderful Sinjir and Jazz's relationship is.
Their
friendship.
Cool. Yeah.
They're like queer platonic soulmates or something.
Yeah.
Like Sinjir talks about missing her, like half of a painting is gone. And I just love it. You hardly ever, it's just such a rare relationship to see.
And at one point she brings up, you know, them hooking up and he's like, you're the wrong gender.
Yeah, like when they first meet.
Yeah, and the way that they meet is so interesting that it's just like, it kind of subverts this idea, because this is kind of a way two people who, you know, would become a pretty intense ship would meet. But then it's like, oh, no, not going to happen. But then they just have this beautiful friendship.
It's still an intense ship for me, just not, you know, like sexual or romantic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they do subvert it because they were both on Endor during the Battle of Endor.
Yeah.
And then he's like, fate has brought us together again. You know, so it's very like the Force is bringing us together, but it's not for romantic reasons, which I love.
They did a really good job with this book in interweaving the new characters with the original trilogy, specifically Return of the Jedi, because Sinjir and Jazz were on Endor. Nora helped blow up the second fucking Death Star.
Yes.
I can't believe George Lucas cut Nora Wexley out of Return of the Jedi.
We have a lot of issues with George around here, so.
Endor, okay. So this is something that I was sort of like, is this just a matter of a man and a woman not sort of having the same idea of how things work, or is it just two authors that didn't get the same notes? But like, Leia implies in Bloodline that Ben Solo was conceived on the Millennium Falcon during a long sublight crawl after they were married. But Han starts remembering this sort of like night under the Endor trees or something, which would imply it was like on Endor, after the battle.
Guess that they were banging a lot during that time.
Yeah, that's my take on it too. Yeah,
and I would probably trust Leia. Of course, Leia being the person who bore him, I would probably trust her judgment more on that.
Yeah,
for Han, it's probably just all a night under the Endor trees in that first because. few months. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm personally, I like the idea of him being conceived on the Millennium Falcon.
I do too. I think it just has this sort of, it's like him being conceived in the car, basically. So that's why.
Him being conceived on Endor seems really, I mean, how long were they on Endor?
Yeah, it's a little early. I mean, but Endor was occupied for a while, but, you know, that doesn't mean that they stayed.
There are lots of people around, too.
Yeah.
And maybe they went back for a visit, and that's when Leia got that acorn, her little meditation tree, which was really, I love that.
Yeah. Okay, the Battle of Jakku, did it definitely take place 1 year after?
I keep on hearing this is 5 years after the Battle of Yavin, and the general consensus as to the timeline is that Empire takes place 3 years after the Battle of Yavin, and Return of the Jedi takes place 6 months. So if this is 5 years after the Battle of Yavin, then it's about a year and a half after.
And Ben was born the day that the treaty was signed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right after, like, almost immediately after the battle then. So, yeah, probably not, like, indoor, like, right after the battle.
Yeah.
If it happens indoor. Okay, so enough of figuring out when Han and Leia had that particular sex.
See, it's stuff like this that makes Ben Solo turn evil.
What, in-universe podcasts about his parents' sex life?
Yeah, probably.
I bet they existed. Oh my god.
Dude, we know for a fact that there are, like, hollow dramatizations of shit about the characters, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god. We got anything else that is huge that we probably need to address?
Let's see. Jakku, the murder droids, Rey Sloane. Oh! It's about an interlude. It's the interlude in Empire's End on Tatooine.
Yes!
Freed slaves, and they ally with the Tusken Raiders, and I stood up and cheered. Like, I pumped my fist. I was like, I love the Tusken Raiders, and I just, like, I live for every time they're treated like people and not animals. Oh, that whole sequence was so cool. Oh.
I was so afraid at the beginning that it was going to end badly, because it was, like, ended so hopefully and left at that interlude, and then I was like, no! But then it all worked out, and I was pleased.
I did find it interesting that that was, like, the only interlude that they went back to. You know, most of the interludes were kind of, like, one-shots, but that one, you know, does, you know, carry over. Yeah, I really like the ones on Tatooine. And I like the appearance by the Tusken Raiders. I like Malakili getting some semblance of the start of a happy ending. I liked that we finally get a fucking explanation to how Boba Fett survived, because I will accept that Boba Fett survived, but I hated what they did in Legends, where he manages to get out because he's awesome. And in this, they actually find a good reason for him to get out. It's like, he fell in, but the Sarlacc was damaged, like, 2 seconds after he fell in, so.
Okay, I barely even remember that, because I don't care about Boba Fett.
I didn't notice that.
There's the guy who's wearing the very familiar Mandalorian armor. It's Boba Fett's Mandalorian armor, and they talk about how Malakili is going to the Sarlacc to either tame it or throw himself in it. And the Sarlacc is partially unburied because it's been damaged by the sail barge, like, because all of the debris, like, fell into it. And so the Jawas are actually, like, cutting it open and, like, pulling shit out of it.
Yeah, I see. I remember that. I just didn't even think about, I mean, I remember seeing the armor and being like, Boba Fett's armor, but I just didn't think about him surviving at all.
They have said that canonically in this version of the universe, Boba Fett is still alive. He's just apparently naked.
Who knows what he's doing?
Yeah, I don't know. He'll turn up at some point. He's not my favorite. I think Boba Fett's a real dude thing, because, like, my brother is just, like, so all about Boba Fett.
When they were thinking about doing a movie about him, I, like, around that time, I was watching, like, the Clone War episodes that are about him as a kid, and I was just like, it would be so great if the Boba Fett movie was, like, psychological rather than a, like, woo, guns.
Oh, they're still thinking about doing a Boba Fett movie. They're thinking about the third anthology movie being about him.
They should do a Princess Leia one.
They should, and they should get, was it Millie Bobby Brown?
Yes.
Yeah, they should get her.
She'd be a really great age. Okay, so I think we got cut off by me being excited about children born with teeth when we were talking about the lumpy interlude. So yes, I do want to go back to that, because not just with lumpy, but, like, this view of kind of what was still going on there even after their liberation was really sad but also hopeful, because it was just like, okay, the planet is basically destroyed and there's still these factions of the Empire there who are basically have gone insane and are still trying to subjugate the Wookiees, but they're fighting back. And just, oh god, when his father rescued him,
that was one of the bits where
Yeah.
You know, the Star Wars Holiday Special definitely did not happen in this universe, because I could not see, like, Waru just, like, watching, like, some cartoon about his dad in this version of things. He says that he doesn't remember, like, not being a slave. And I'm like, oh my god. Chewie. Oh, God. And Chewie's been going around all of this time. And you know it was tearing him apart to, like, not be with his family. And it was tearing Han apart because Han felt so guilty about everything. And oh, just, oh, God.
I was so happy that in Life Debt we got such a long view of the situation with the Wookiees.
This is definitely superior to Legends. And this is coming from somebody who really likes Legends. In Legends, Chewie is away from his family until the day he dies.
Oh, God.
No.
Yeah, I mean, he goes back a couple of times, but for the most part, he's with Han because that's the way the Life Debts work in that version of the universe. But in this, I think they really established that while there is a Life Debt between Chewie and Han, it's more just a matter of the fact that they're family. And Han has no problem with Chewie going off and rebuilding his entire world, which has been poisoned by the Empire.
God, all of the descriptions in all of these tie-in novels about exactly how badly the Empire treats these planets and just treats
all the environmental devastation.
Yeah, yes, because like, you have, this isn't a really huge spoiler for the Ahsoka novel, but like the planet there, they're just going to grow their food and like then leave it after they've leached the soil. There's
mentions. It's barely a spoiler because it happens in every tie-in. The Empire exploits some world for something.
Yeah, it's like what happens with Thane and Sayana's world and the worlds where there are kyber crystals and Kashyyyk and everywhere. It's just, they just treat them. And that's what colonialists do.
Yeah.
To play, you know, it's like one of those things, even, you know, I've read about like, even the state of West Virginia, people have talked about how it is comparable to a third world or developing nation because outside interests come in, take the resources, and don't spend any of the money in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Just think about this devastation being planet-wide, and also, you know, since Star Wars planets, for some reason, tend to be single biome, it's sort of like really devastating to think of just these entire planets being dead. And, you know, like, what's his name? Senator in
Wartol?
Yes.
Tolwar?
Yeah, his world that they had to poison it themselves to get the Empire to go away. Like, it's just insane.
I was really thrown by the description of, you know, his species breeding practices. So that they have zero growth.
Yeah,
and it's just like, that's...
Yeah,
so... But, I mean, they do acknowledge at least the species is endangered because of what happened to them with the Empire, that they basically, they killed themselves to save themselves from the Empire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was pretty chilled when they were talking about Tatooine. And there's, you know, they say that there's some resources that they can get from there.
Oh, yes!
And then they say that actually the most valuable thing on Tatooine is the slave breeding stock.
Oh, God.
I know! I was like, what the heck?
I couldn't believe... It's like, I know that they put that slavery was part of it in the prequel trilogy, but considering we did see... like a fair bit of Tatooine, like in the original trilogy, I thought that it had actually, like, they had stopped like their slaving practices, but it's like, no, still around. And so I'm like, wow, that really colors like every single fanfic about Luke.
Or if you think about it, if it did go away, are they just talking about, oh, these people are still here and they've been breeding and they're still good stock to just resubjugate?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Again.
Well, I mean, they do reference former slaves, but I think that's only because that Jabba is now dead, so that there's slavery's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Star Wars is so fucking heavy.
It is. Somewhere I was thinking, you know, people who are like, oh, don't do that in Star Wars because, you know, children, but I think in The Phantom Menace, there's a child who's a slave. You've got a child queen going to war. Attack of the Clones, Boba Fett sees his dad decapitated in front of him.
In Return of the Jedi, you have Princess Leia in a gold bikini chained to a slug, and...
Yeah.
I asked my old boss about, he has a 6-year-old son, about how he handled The Force Awakens, because they had just watched everything, you know, over the course of the year before The Force Awakens came out, and I was like, well, how did he handle Han Solo's death? And he was just like, well, he's old enough to understand storytelling and what's real and what's story. So it upset him, but he said it probably didn't upset him nearly as much as it did us. Because, you know, he hadn't grown up with Han Solo. And yeah, Han Solo was a hero, but he understood, okay, Han died in the story.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, us were all like, my childhood.
Well, and then another friend of mine said that her kids that she taught, who are like pre-K and stuff, would talk about, like, were really, really interested in what's going to happen to Kylo Ren. They just want to know, like, what's going to happen to him?
Probably because they can relate to his volatile emotional state.
Probably, yeah.
I'm kind of being humorous, but I'm serious, too.
Yeah. Last thoughts on Aftermath?
You should read it. But if you are daunted by the idea of reading 3 500-page books, you can read the second two after you read a summary of the first one.
Well, yes. And also that the interludes, those chapters, they can be read like little, like, one-shot stories.
I actually would like an anthology to be written of just, like, interlude-like stories like that.
Yeah, or just, like, they should pull those out. Yeah.
Awesome. Like, is Chuck Wendig out there writing fan fiction, like, one-shots?
We could probably find out, you know, just, you know, at him on Twitter, and maybe we'll get a response like we did for... I think the general consensus is, you know, just go and read Aftermath. Though, actually, probably you should have read it before listening to this, because we got so spoilery on things.
But not too... There's so much there, it's really
there is a lot.
Spoil.
Like, I mean, there's, like... There's so much that we could talk about, just with character dynamics and plots and everything, but... Yeah, no, I think we're just all, like, super happy with the Aftermath trilogy, at least after we get past the first one.
Yeah.
I did like it. I thought it was a good intro.
It was an all right story, but the other ones were great.
Yeah.
Yay for present tense writing, too. Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, I know a lot of people really, really hate it, but I thought it was fine.
It works in some situations.
So I'm just like, yay!
Yeah.
Basically, it should be used when appropriate.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for coming on, and we hope to have you on again sometime. All right. So that was our roundtable on the Aftermath trilogy. I'd like to thank April and Smalls for joining me for the conversation.
Yes.
I had quite a lot of fun talking to them, and I hope you guys had fun listening to it.
I can't wait to finish the book so I can go listen.
And I want you to finish reading it just so that I can talk to you about it.
I know. There's much squeeing that has to happen.
Yes.
And speaking of squeeing, we got a couple of different messages this month, all from the same person. I love her so much. Senpaiko sent us a couple of different things.
Yay, Senpaiko!
Oh my god. She did a commission for me that I should reblog to our Tumblr because it's so beautiful and perfect. And
she's been doing some really great work of late. She's really taken to Rogue One and coming out with a lot of Rogue One work. So
fantastic.
She loves Rebel Captain and Chirrut Baze, which just, yeah.
How can you?
Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
So, yeah, do you want to read the email she sent us or part of
it? Sure, yeah.
We're going to post part of it on Tumblr because it's a really long email.
Yeah. I wanted to say that you guys are amazing. I've downloaded all the episodes and I've been re-listening on my phone while I work. I know you ladies are super busy with real life shit and I'm so amazed that you find time to do the podcast. Yeah, it's really hard to actually find time to do the podcast
this
sometimes.
This month has been tricky.
While I enjoy them more frequently, it is understandable why it is once a month. Some things are worth the wait, and you guys always are. I would draw you more fan art, but as you know, I am deep in commission work at the moment, not to mention the few other Rebel Captain pieces that I started and need finishing. Anytime you want to do Rebel Captain work, just go for it.
Yes,
you know.
Please.
They are my new OTP and I can't get enough. They are my current source of inspiration at the moment. And girls, I still think about sex in an X-Wing. So do
well,
we.
Who doesn't?
So do we. And I want your opinion on a theory, reclining seat or an adjustable expanding seat. I know in most schematics, it doesn't look like there's room. But there has to be a way to adjust the seat. Things can move around, right? In a universe with their advanced technology, they need to be sure their pilots are comfortable in their seats. And we know they are capable of hyperspace travel. So on long trips, you're telling me they don't have a way for pilots to lean back and rest or get comfortable?
You know? Well, I mean, for one thing, I don't think that Lucasfilm has thought about this as much as we have.
No, definitely not. And yeah, the schematics don't support the idea of an adjustable seat. But
We know that they do.
It kind of does make sense.
Like the comics, we see Luke like jetting off, and he's in his X-wing forever. And they've got to be comfortable somehow.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if they have, we do know that they can, like, autopilot it. Like, the astromech can run it for a while, and I suspect that probably happens if they're going on long, deep space things, where they want to take a nap or something. So that might be, like, yeah, they might need some, you know, to adjust their seat a little bit. And also just the fact that people are different heights.
Although, if you think about it, thinking about some of the actors who play X-Wing pilots, none of them are, like, super tall.
No, I mean, that does kind of go with a lot of fighter pilots. They tend to go for smaller, more compact people.
Oh, I'm going to get giggly because I have such a thing about X-Wing pilots now.
I know you do. Now you have a thing for X-Wing.
It's gotten worse. Now I have more to choose from. Yeah. So I don't know what it is about X-Wings, man, but we're just...
I mean, if anybody else would like to write a story about it, and they can, please, if you do it, send us a link to it.
Yes, please.
And you can find us on Tumblr at trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com, on Twitter at swtrashpodcast, our website, trashcompactorpodcast.com, or email at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com.
Hooray! We look forward to hearing you guys. We do love to get email, for sure.
Yes. Send us email about, you know, X-Wings, X-Wing pilots, sex in X-Wings, or, you know, actually, you know, anything that's coming up. You know, talk to us about Aftermath, about any of the other books, about what's coming up with The Last Jedi. I mentioned The Last Jedi, so.
Oh. Okay, this is like, we do have to mention this. I don't know if you saw, but in all of the foreign language versions of the title,
It's plural.
Yeah. So we have that confirmation now. The Last Jedi is plural.
Yeah. But what does it mean? There's still so many possibilities.
Right.
Like, is it two Jedi? Or is it more than that? Is there a lost tribe of Jedi? We won't know until December.
Ezra Bridger's going to show up. That's my prediction.
Yes. I would like Ezra to be around.
Right, so next month...
I'd like also like Kanan, too, but, you know, let's you know, fingers crossed. Yes, next month.
We have a very special April episode planned for next month.
Yes, I should apologize, but I won't. Next month, we will be talking about Ewoks. Are they good? Are they bad? You know, what are the pros and cons of Ewoks? And we will be talking about the Ewok cartoon from the 80s, as well as the Ewok movies.
I am kind of looking forward to this. I do love Ewoks, so...
It's not as bad as the holiday special, don't worry.
Okay, well, I mean, that's...
that's a fair, low-hanging fruit.
So we'll see how this goes next month.
Okay, we'll see you guys then.
All right, bye.